This is Candace Ellis on July 7th with Diana Dombrowski and John and Karen Deming talking about growing up and life in the Panama Canal Zone. So I guess we'll kind of start at the beginning. How did you guys come to the zone? Were you first generation?
I was first generation. I came to the Canal Zone in 1955 when I was 12 years old. My father got a job down there. Mm-hmm. He was a magistrate there for, I guess, 20 years. And then I stayed there until I was 18 and went to college in the States. So I was there about 6 years. Mm-hmm. Is how I got there.
I was born in Gorgas Hospital. Oh, okay. In Ancon Canal Zone. Mm-hmm. In 1944, my parents met down there. They both went down as children. Neither of them were born.
Okay.
In the Canal Zone. Mm-hmm. I was first generation born there. Mm-hmm. And so I lived there for 18 years until I went away to college. So I grew up there. And
what kind of work did your parents do while they were there?
My mother's father, mm-hmm. There's a little bit of history there, how he got there was interesting. My mother's from Irvington, New Jersey, and my grandfather, my mother's side, he and his brother owned a plumbing business. Mm-hmm. And I guess it was before World War II, probably somewhere
during the Depression.
During the Depression or right after. They lost their plumbing business and was mm-hmm. out of work, and it was a real struggle. He saw an ad in the New York Times looking for plumbers to work for the Panama Canal. Mm-hmm. So he answered the ad, and they sent him a ticket, told him he could bring a suitcase, and told my grandmother and my mother was an only child, that he would let them know when they could come down. So 6 months later, they packed up just their clothing and took the ship down there. And that's how they ended down there. My dad, very similar story, but it was earlier than that, and from Baltimore. My grandfather decided that he was a pipe fitter. He loved to fish in the Chesapeake, and he wanted to go to Panama and work, and he heard there was good fishing, and he took his four children then, and they went down, and then they had three more, and so mm-hmm. that's how they ended up there. And then my parents met down there. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the canal, the hospital you mentioned, which side was that on?
It's on the Pacific side. Gorgas Hospital.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did you guys do a lot of moving back and forth between the Pacific and Atlantic?
We did not, but there were my father had, there were seven mm-hmm. Siblings, and his three sisters married people down there, and they lived on the Atlantic side. Their husbands okay. had jobs in the Atlantic side, mm-hmm. but the four boys were always on the Pacific side.
And it was relatively easy to travel back and forth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We thought it was a long drive, 50 miles, and it was like, oh, we have to drive over there again. But we went back and forth to visit, you know, relatives.
Mm-hmm. And what side were you on?
Well, the Pacific side. Mm-hmm. My father was a judge there, yeah. And he would work on both sides. They had a judge on the Atlantic side, a judge on the Pacific side, and a district court judge. And when the judge on the Atlantic side was on vacation, my dad would ride the train back and forth every day.
Mm-hmm. It was very easy to get back and forth, mm-hmm. What we remember, because we had a good train system and a fairly good highway. Fairly good. I mean, we thought it was good until we came to the United States on vacation, then we realized.
Yeah. Did you come to the States very often?
If I remember correctly, the leave system was pretty much the way the military is today. I think that you got 30 days vacation a year, but you could save it up So some families would wait until they had 3 months vacation or close to it, and then they would come up for the summer and stay with relatives. So everybody had a home of record somewhere in the United States, the Americans. And we came to the States about every 3 years or 4 years for maybe 2 months, because my dad and his father and his uncles, I mean his brothers, all fished, and they had to have their fishing time. So we didn't. Some families came every year for a month and took their leave, and there were three ships that went back and forth, and but we didn't because of the fishing. But we, yeah, so. And it was like the excitement to come to the United States. It was like nothing that you've ever experienced. It was like, wow. There's just so much to see and do.
Mm-hmm. Was the zone a bit isolated, did you feel? Is that why people were so excited to go to the U.S.?
It was the only, yes. Mm-hmm. And you had so many relatives in the United States, and very few relatives came to Panama. I should say the Canal Zone. Back then, it was very expensive. They'd have to take a ship down, and so everybody looked forward to going back and seeing. Sometimes it was your grandparents. One time it was my grandparents were living in California, so. For a while, and to see maybe, you know, cousins from the other side. Yeah, it was just, and to shop. I mean,
oh, okay.
We relied on whatever the commissary got, and the commissary was, we were civilians, but it was pretty much operated like a military base. We called it a commissary, they called it a PX. So whatever they didn't get, we'd look in Panama, but we relied on the Sears catalog. Big time. Everybody in the, right John, everybody in the Canal Zone knew when the Sears catalog was being delivered.
What would you say you miss most about not being able to shop? Was it, you know, just being able to go out and buy clothes, stuff like that? Or?
I think once I became a teenager, it was the shoes and the clothes, because we all pretty much got magazines. There was always, I think it was Good Housekeeping and 17 Magazine way back then, and you'd see all the styles that everybody, all the kids in the States were wearing in their shoes, and you know, we were very limited. Mm-hmm. But we would take, because we were in a country that had a lot of
piecework, I guess is
the
word.
You could, the women in Panama, the Panamanians, made most of their clothing. So we could take a picture out of 17 Magazine or any magazine of something that, and go find the fabric in a store in Panama. Or the commissary also had fabric. Just take it to a dressmaker. Mm-hmm. No pattern or anything. We'd show her the picture, and she'd say, okay, come back on Friday, and she'd have it done. Wow. Very, very reasonably, you know, $3, $4.
Wow.
So we did have, we didn't suffer if, you know, that way. We could get the outfits made if we could find the fabric. Mm-hmm. So, but we did, we were, you know, always in awe of what the kids in the States were wearing. And so we'd come to the States, we'd always, you know, it's always, I got to buy shoes, you got to buy whatever you could, you know, whatever you could buy and stay within your budget.
Well, that sounds very crafty. How about differences maybe in housing as far as the U.S. versus Panama? Was there a lot of cooperative housing in Panama, living together, or was it more single-family homes?
A lot of cooperative housing. There were also a lot of single-family, mm-hmm. but a lot of families, a lot of new employees started out in 12-family housing, mm-hmm. 4-family housing. I think my parents lived in every model house there, pretty much. And some of them, it's I can't remember any house I lived in that was uncomfortable or any complaints. I mean, it's just we didn't know any difference.
Mm-hmm.
Everything was always taken care of. So there was always somebody mowing the grass, trimming the trees. You know, it was just.
Actually, we came down. My dad had a congressional appointment as a judge, and we got a single family home. And quite frankly, I felt some resentment from other kids that I didn't have to start out in a 12 family home. But so you just kind of got through that.
Well, you're going to hear a lot about the housing as you do these interviews, because there were a lot of different areas of where people lived, and some of the areas were isolated. They might have only been a 20 minute car drive away, but that was a long distance back then. But they all had their own little colonies, I should say. But the interesting part about the housing was you were assigned housing depending on your years of service and how many children you had.
And number of boys and girls.
Number of boys and girls, right. Who was living in the household with you. It did have to do with your rank and file, so to speak. If you were a congressional appointment like his dad was, or you were had a high level job, that would be a government appointed job. They had special housing. You didn't start out in the lower level. But like for instance, my father was an electrician. And there could have been, which was considered, I guess, a blue collar, there could have been a family living right attached to us that was white collar or next door. It all had to do with the year service. Some people came down and they were already in their 20s. My father started right out of high school as an apprentice. So it all had to do with your years of service and your children. Like, and if you only needed a two-bedroom house or apartment, that's what you got. Then if you had another child and it was a boy, you still maybe didn't qualify for another bedroom. But if it was a girl, then they'd separate. In our case, my grandparents lived with us. So that kind of gave us an extra bedroom when we moved. And they would post it, I think it was every month, on the wall of the post office, a certain date. Everybody was looking to move, and they wanted to move. They would go to see what was available, what was coming up as people moved around and left, retired, and you'd put your name in, and then you just waited to see if you qualified and if you know you were next in line. So you're going to hear a lot about how the housing worked down there, because you really just couldn't just say I want to live on that street and I want to live in that house now. There was a chance that could happen if it all worked out, but
because from what I've gathered and seen, that there was a lot of moving, and even between the Atlantic and Pacific side, a lot of moving just based on what you know your job called for.
And in some cases, there were, because I have classmates that started out on the Pacific side and then graduated from the high school on the other side, and vice versa. But none of my close friends that I associated with moved like that, but there was a lot of that.
Mm-hmm.
But the Atlantic side was a much smaller area than the Pacific side, so the majority of people lived on the Pacific side.
Right, and as far as the Atlantic being smaller, would you say it's smaller townships, more spread out, more rural? And then I know the Pacific side has Panama City. Did that make it more lively, or?
I believe we had a lot more to do on the Pacific side. Yeah.
And Gamboa is in the middle, isn't it? Basically,
Gamboa is
isolated.
The middle. Yeah. And what's interesting is you'll find if you do many interviews with people who lived most of the time in Gamboa, you will find that they were a very, very close group mm-hmm. of people because okay. they were really, it was, mm-hmm. yeah, it was like a subdivision or a development that we have here, mm-hmm. kind of isolated, and everybody who lived there pretty much worked for a certain part of the canal because there was the dredging division was there, and that's where a lot of, and they had a movie theater and they had a commissary and they probably had a teen club, but there wasn't much of a swimming pool. That was about, I think they had a golf course.
Do they have a high school?
No.
No.
There
was only two high schools.
There was only two high schools.
Actually.
This is an embarrassment on my part, but off the record.
It's being taped.
When I grew up there, well, there was segregation until the 60s. Mm-hmm. I was gone in 62. But there was a town called Paraiso, and it was right on the near the Miraflores Locks, and they were non-U.S. employees, Panamanians or from the islands.
Mm-hmm.
They had housing for them, so they worked for the Panama Canal, but they were considered they were segregated. They had a high school, and I didn't much pay attention when I was in high school didn't even think about, well, where did the kids who lived, because it was quite a big community actually, but they were all, you know, kind of by themselves. Mm-hmm. And I was living in Miami and I was taking golf lessons, and this guy next to me had a sticker on his car, and I was getting my golf clubs out and he was just leaving, and he was a black man, and I said, oh, I said you're from the Canal Zone. And he said, yes, we're talking. He said, I grew up there. And so what did I say to him? I said, and he graduated about the same time I did. He says, did you graduate from Balboa High School or Cristobal High School? He just looked at me. He says, I graduated from Paraiso High School. We had football games and we had baseball games and we had all the sports only between the Atlantic and the Pacific side. I don't know who they played. I have no idea if they just played each other. And you know.
Actually, that's probably an untold story down there.
Mm-hmm.
You won't get that from this group.
That's the first time I've heard of it, that high school, because something that we're a little interested in is of course, the racial tension in the area and just, you know, how stateside politics were affecting, you know, I'm talking specifically about the civil rights movement and all that led up to it and how that was playing out in Panama and the zone at the time.
Well, the military was just, we had a few black students in our school, but they were military.
Okay.
And
because the military kids also went to school with us.
Okay.
Don't forget there was that set of kids.
Yes.
Every 2 years they would come and go.
2 years or 3 years. Mm-hmm. We did have some Panamanians that went to our school. They paid tuition to go to the American schools. Right. But that was...
And they were usually the wealthy Panamanians.
They were usually the wealthy Panamanians, and there weren't a lot of them. But Paraiso, I remember, John, so remember, I came home that day, I said, I have no idea where my head was when I was, I didn't even dawn on me.
Mm-hmm. And I always worked when I was in, before I went to Panama, I had paper routes and did all that. And down here, I couldn't work. Finally, I got a job in construction, I mean, 50 cents an hour. And I was the only white person working construction. Of course, and they were giving me a hard time. I was taking the 50 cents an hour from somebody else. I said, well, I want to work too. And I worked with a young man from Paraiso. I mean, he and I put all, one of the housing developments was being built in, I guess, La Boca. And he and I all summer long put in windows. That's what we did, and, you know. And he's my age, and I would wonder what happened to him. I'm sure he's still down there. But he'd show up every morning from Paraiso, and, you know, and me being the only white kid there, they kind of pushed me a little bit to see how hard I could work. And after about a week, they figured out I was serious. And then they gave me an easier job. And so I knew what was going on. I didn't grow up down there as a kid. I grew up as a teenager down there. I was there 6 years and left. And it was a great 6 years, learned a lot, learned stuff I would never have learned otherwise, but
there was
I knew about this.
Okay. But there was never any tension. There was never any, there was never any, it was just a matter of fact, I guess, and the people lived in Paraiso were absolutely thrilled that they were working for the, you know, for the Panama Canal Company. They were very happy living there than, you know, trying to make it in Panama City, because Panama was not as prosperous as it is today.
Oh, no, those people had good jobs. I'm sure they missed the Americans.
They had good jobs, had good benefits, and you know, they, but it was just, it was just a
different,
it was just a different time. That all changed, of course, you know, by the late 60s, and I was gone, so I don't know. Yeah. You'll probably hear from other people how that changed after the 60s.
But if you Google American language newspapers in Panama, I was doing that for some reason last week, and there's a bunch of links to what they would call the silver, because, you know, white people were paid gold.
The gold and silver, yeah.
There's something that was associated with this, I think it might be using called the silver newspaper. So there's a there's some information out there that I just stumbled across.
Thank you, that's interesting. I'm sorry, when did you guys say you actually left the zone?
I graduated in 1961 and went to college in Nebraska.
Okay, and then...
And I left in 62 and went to Nebraska.
Okay, so it was before those riots, which I knew kind of changed the entire...
Yes.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was
before
that.
We had a couple when we were still there.
But yeah.
Very minor. There was never... It was probably... The riots were pretty much didn't involve the canal zone at all, but the university students would.
Well, they'd be in Ancon where I lived.
Right on the border.
Okay.
But it was escalating.
Part of my education. I'd have been a Nebraska farm boy if I hadn't been down there. I had a whole different life.
It was an American colony. Everything was. We never locked our doors. We never locked our cars. There was nothing stopping a Panamanian from coming over the line and driving up our street, parking. You know, I mean, it was just, and there was never a problem.
Everybody had
the military bases all had guard gates. You just couldn't get in for any reason. But in the canal zone itself, it was wide open. But it was, I guess, just. Everybody had maids. I mean, the maids came on buses, and but it was.
We could walk it anywhere we wanted
to.
It
was that safe.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't recommend a lot of places today.
Yeah, I've heard that.
When we were kids, we could go any. And my father, being the judge, probably put a lot of people in jail over time. He was there a long time.
Mm-hmm. I used to get on a Chiba, the bus, and go take riding lessons in Panama. I was 11 years old. My parents didn't worry. I'd get on the bus. I knew where to get off. I was always a girlfriend going with me. We'd be on a Chiba with all the Panamanians and live chickens. And, I mean, it was just...
The way it was.
Yeah, just the way it was. And nobody felt... nobody was fearful. Nobody was... No, it was just a great... I would do it all over again. It was, you know...
What's your guys' opinions on the education system that was in place there?
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
I got an excellent high school education there. I mean, I was very lucky to get that education.
Which of the two high schools did you attend?
One in Balboa.
Okay. Which was...
the Pacific Balboa. Side.
Okay, yeah.
Pacific side. My guess is there wasn't a teacher in junior high and high school that didn't have a... master's degree, I would guess.
I don't know.
They were very well educated, the teachers that came down.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to Balboa as well?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I know sports and the football and the rivalry was a huge thing. Did you guys participate in that?
I'm not big enough to play football.
No. You can watch.
I did do that.
Mm-hmm.
My only participation was twirling the baton.
Oh, that's fun.
Sports, even in not the extracurricular sports, but even the we all had to take sports. Every 6 weeks it changed. All 4 years of high school.
Yeah, you had to play basketball, track, touch
field
football.
Hockey. Every six weeks it was a different sport, and including 6 weeks of swimming every year. We girls hated that. We didn't have hair dryers. We didn't, you know, if you lucked out and got swimming first period in the morning, and back in our day, like, you girls all wear your hair and you just can let it dry and, you know, you wear it long or whatever. But no, we all slept in rollers all night, whatever. So if you had swimming first period and your bathing cap leaked, the rest of your day was ruined.
That's funny. Do the high schools offer a lot of extracurricular activities for the students?
Yes. Mm-hmm. A lot of sports, okay. Extracurricular and... yeah, big sports was very, very popular.
And besides that, how would you describe an average Saturday night for a high school student growing up there? Like,
lucky for us, it was best thing is, and I forget who, I don't know who was responsible for it. I can't remember now, but they built a teen club for us. And it was a good size, and it served snacks, and it was always all the music and, you know, jukebox and all that. And of course, there was never any, you know, drinking, and smoking was probably the worst thing back then. I mean, there was drinking, but so we always had the teen club. We always had curfews. I mean, very few of us stayed out past 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. Teen club closed. Parents picked us up if we didn't drive. Couldn't drive till we were 17. Mm-hmm. In there. So, with the movie theater, it was cheap. Everybody went to the movies. And not only that, but it was air conditioned, and most of us didn't have air conditioning.
No TV. There were TV towards the end when we left.
Nobody ever went into Panama until we got our driver's license, and there were a few little, you know, miniature golf places and a few little nightclubs that...
That'd be fun. Was it easy to have a part-time job there as a high school student?
No.
I
probably got one because my father was a judge. Mm-hmm. Somehow he knew somebody who knew somebody who got a contractor to hire me, and I don't think the contractor really wanted to hire me. They worked me pretty hard the first few days, see if I was serious.
Babysitting, I babysat. I had a summer job one summer. We're still good friends. It was the spouse of an employee in Kurundu, and she was working on her PhD in archaeology. And she had an area in Panama that she was involved in the excavation. So she built this place. It was kind of in the jungle, sort of in the jungle. We would get dropped off, and you have to walk down this dirt road, and then there would just be this covered area. She would bring the stuff back where it was all mapped out. So she put the stuff where it... On the map of where it was, where they found it. Mm-hmm. Judy and I would have to scrub these pieces of pottery. That's what we did. We had buckets of water, we'd scrub it, and we got, I don't know, 50 cents an hour or something like that. We did that one summer when we were maybe 16. That was lucky to get that job.
Mm-hmm. It was hard. That was actually one thing that was...
It was very hard to... Because
you go to the beach all summer, that's what you do. Spend too much time in the sun.
And a lot of kids came stateside in the summertime. People would be gone, and everybody had maids, and then the Panconel company itself, they paid people to wash. Well, we had someone who washed our car.
Oh, wow.
We paid, no, the government didn't pay for that. Oh. We did, but it didn't cost
anything.
They paid
to cut the grass.
The grass. You didn't have yard work. You had a maid that cleaned your house. You paid for that, but it was very, very cheap. And so there really wasn't any jobs available. Babysitting was the big thing. And maybe lifeguarding, like the pools in the Army bases and stuff, Navy bases, the lifeguards, and maybe you, the some guys were caddies at the golf course. But other than that, like ushers at the movie theater, there were a few jobs, but not very many.
Mm-hmm.
And then once you, I think it was, once you graduated from high school, you could get a summer job working in the administration building. I did do that summer, and then when I came back after 1 year of college.
Oh, I forgot. I worked in a newspaper down there.
Yeah. There were...
In Panama. I worked in an English language newspaper for one summer. I made a mistake. I didn't call him up and ask him if I could have a job the second summer, so he hired somebody else.
Oh.
Right. You really had to search for the jobs. You really did.
Mm-hmm.
And know somebody.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Were there any... How are holidays celebrated? Is there anything, you know, distinctly different than from maybe Christmas? Because I know I'm trying to recall from last year the tree burning, the bonfire burning. I know a lot of people did that. And just any little, you know, story like that, or how, you know, the people in the zone kind of created their own version of Christmas, maybe their own Christmas traditions, or Thanksgiving, even New Year's, 4th of July.
Well, July, we always had a parade, July 4th parade. Of course, back then, firecrackers were allowed, so mm-hmm. we were always burning ourselves. And, you know, even the parents looked forward to July 4th so they could blow up these things. And I remember my dad would, what was it called? He would light this thing. It was like a incense stick.
The punk stick.
What'd you call it?
A sparkler.
Punk stick. Okay. It was called a punk stick. Mm-hmm. And we'd just keep it lit, and then whenever we wanted to throw a firecracker, we'd take the firecracker and stick it on there and then throw it. And luckily, I don't think anybody was seriously hurt. But it was kind of wild and crazy. And Christmas was always... everybody lit up their house. Everybody decorated, and Santa was riding an alligator, and, you know, it wasn't anything that looked like snow or anything. It was always tropical, and Christmas was a big thing, and everybody was waiting for the shipment of trees. Of course, by the time they reached Panama, and the commissary had them for sale, half the needles were missing already anyway, we used to joke that you could hear the needles falling on the tile floor all night long. So by the time Christmas was over, you'd get the trees were so dry that the bonfires were fantastic.
Oh, wow.
And they had gangs that would, you'd go around all your neighbors and they'd promise you the tree. So the gangs would go out there and they would collect the trees, but you'd have to hide them, and you'd try to find someone who did have a garage or some place where you could hide the trees, because everybody was stealing the trees from everybody else, because everybody wanted to have the largest bonfire. And it was a big to-do. Whole neighborhoods would, when they were going to light the bonfire, everybody had their marshmallows and their hot dogs, and everybody, as soon as they got the fire down to where they could cook the food, everybody fixed their hot dogs and marshmallows, parents and kids, and it was...
That was special. Actually, another time when you did, I thought you'd talk about clothes. Just before school every year, they'd bring a ship full of clothes into the commissary. Of course, they'd have 15 shirts that were all alike. So the first day of school,
everybody
all had the same shoes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the holidays, Thanksgiving. I don't know what other people did, but I had so many relatives. My dad, there were seven children, and my mother was an only child, but they were just cousins, and we would kind of rotate around who was having it, mm-hmm. and we'd either go to the Atlantic side or they'd come to the Pacific side. We'd all get together, and that was a big to do. And if you're the turkey you were going to cook was really too large to cook in our ovens, really weren't that large. You just would take your turkey to the the clubhouse. Now, the clubhouse was the central restaurant and had the pool and the movie theater and, mm-hmm. you know, and they would cook it for you. They just tell you what time it comes to get up. And my dad would go and pick up the turkey and bring it home. And
it's a convenient service.
Yeah.
It was really a big military base. You hit the nail on the head. And we were in the military later on in life. And
but
it's the same.
The canal zone ran a lot like a military base. Just it was, and school supplies.
They all showed up at the same time.
And it didn't matter. I went to parochial school for up through sixth grade, and then I went to junior high and high school, public. And even in, it didn't matter where you went to school, the parochial school was part of the canal zone. We must have paid tuition, though, I think, to go there, I'm guessing. Minimal or whatever. But there was a week that the commissary had school supplies in, and you went, and they had this special building that was huge, and in it were rows and rows of packages, all the school supplies that you would go for. St. Mary's School, for Balboa Elementary, for the junior high school, whatever, and everything was already sealed and wrapped in brown paper, and you went and you just got your package. And you'd go, you know, you'd pay for it, and when you got home, you opened it up, and then it was all your school supplies were already packaged for you.
That's easy, too.
Yeah. So it was very, very regulated. Okay. Everything was regulated.
Well, if you had to behave yourself, or if you misbehaved, your parents would be shipped out of the country.
Did you hear about that happening to anybody?
Yes.
Nobody that
not
I...
Not while we were there. Mm-hmm.
Well,
the riots, after the riots.
There was...
Right.
Okay.
There was one, and I mean, I knew who he was. He wasn't in my class or whatever, but the story was he stole something from the commissary. My guess is he had done it on a time before that, because I don't think one incident like that, they'd ship you out. Mm-hmm. But by the end of the week, they were gone.
Wow.
Gone. Oh, yeah. It was...
Do you know what he was stealing, or he was just...
I have no idea.
Yeah, I just...
That's
someone,
just an example.
Someone,
yeah, I guess that didn't happen too often.
No, it didn't, mm-hmm. but, you know, some kids have a problem that way. And my guess is they'd had a problem with him, and nobody knew it, and then all of a sudden, you know, they said, okay, this is it.
But I'll tell you another story. There were kids get into trouble, and to this day... Some adults will come up to me and say, your dad changed my life, because what he would do when a young man got in trouble, he'd say, you can either go to jail or you can join the military. Hmm. And the ones that joined the military got straightened out. And a lot of them, I've been approached by several people over the years that have told me that my father did that for them. Hmm. At the time, they didn't get it, but after the fact, they realized that he'd helped them.
But there was not a lot of problems down there.
What would you say the most common crime would be in the zone?
I would just say juvenile delinquency.
Yeah, just kids being kids.
Kids being kids, but rowdy. Going
maybe
a little bit too far.
Maybe a speeding ticket or a car, mm-hmm. you know, speeding ticket or, yeah.
Probably just like when you guys were growing up. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I'm
but
sure
there weren't
everybody's
any,
got stories.
There weren't any, No major crime.
Mm-mm. No gangs or anything like that.
No.
Okay.
What was it like leaving the zone? I know, to come back to the United States and go to college and do that. Was it difficult?
Probably harder for me than John.
Mm-hmm.
Because I left. I was the oldest, and so I left. And my father died when I was 16, and
me.
I was the oldest, so I was kind of, you know, I kind of was. That was hard because I felt like maybe I should have stayed down there to help, because my brother's 11 was 11 years younger than me.
Mm-hmm.
But once I got used to living in the States, and then of course John was in college for 8 years. We got married while he was in college. I didn't have any desire to live down there. Hmm. My mom had moved to Florida, and my family was, you know, all in Florida then. But it was hard when everybody was still there, my sister and my brother and my mom, and because you couldn't just get on the phone and call, because mm-hmm. If it was an emergency or something, then you would call. But all the phone lines were under the ocean cables, so, and it was expensive. So you would talk, and I'd say something, and then there was this big long delay, and then my mother would answer. So when you just said what you had to say real quick and got off the phone, because it was expensive. Mm-hmm. It was all, so most of it was through the mail, and it would take a week or more for a letter to get back and forth. Mm-hmm. So that was the hardest part, because you didn't have the communication that you have now. Now, I mean, you can practically on a cell phone call for nothing.
Yeah.
And email, and, you know, I email classmates in Panama all the time. But we didn't have any of that. That was the hardest, because, and you'll probably hear that from other people our age, that you just were cut off from the communication.
So, and that was more about your family than a connection to the physical.
Yes, more about the family.
Yeah.
But that would also would draw people back there. They would get their education and say, well, you know, my family's still down there. I've got to go back there. And so a lot of people, that's how a lot of people went back after college, and they stayed till they retired. Mm-hmm. Their parents retired and moved while they were still there. And then they stayed till they retired. And I probably would have. We probably would have done that if our parents were still there. But
no, I never would have gone back.
No. Why is that?
I'm a chemical engineer, and the only thing I could do down there is work in a waste treatment plant.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And
well, plus he didn't. He was.
I didn't have the strong connections to
that. That was my only home. I was born there. I had no, you know.
Right.
I mean, I still feel that. My kids are all grown up, grandkids and stuff. But Panama is still, you know, most of my relatives are buried there. And I still think of it as
home.
Yeah.
Do you get to visit often?
No.
Yes. Well, she'd go back every... I would go back
more often. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many changes, though. It's not the same anymore.
I've heard, yeah.
It's not...
I've heard a lot of the little townships are completely overgrown. And
oh,
a
yeah.
Bit, yeah.
Oh, it's just...
Yeah.
It's just... we took our daughter... this was 7 years ago. Took her and her husband and the two little girls, and we went back. And I was so excited, because I took her on tour, and I took her by all the houses I lived in that I could find. It looked
better than this, but you know, it still looked like the houses, and I'm telling her all kinds of stories, and she's enjoying it, and they're taking pictures, and we're taking pictures, and so that night we toured just the canal zone that day, pointing out everything. That was where the commissary was, so we're having dinner that night. And we're sitting there, and we'd all had a glass of wine. And so I said to Suzanne, I said, now, Suzanne, I said, you haven't said too much. I said, how did you feel about today, seeing all these places where I lived and how old I was and moved here and this and that and whatever? Tears started running down her face. I said, at first I thought, oh, she, you know, tears. I said, what's the matter? She says, Mom, she said, I had no idea you were so poor growing up.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. It was just, she never experienced that way of life mm-hmm. growing up. And, of course, 7 years ago, a lot of the houses still, I mean, you know, the pandemic.
They were a mess. So.
Yeah, things weren't looking too good and whatever. And, yeah, I mean, I said, we weren't poor. I mean, we were. We didn't know it. We had every need, you know, supplied for us, and mm-hmm. so. But it was just the difference.
Yeah.
I mean, if you both went down there today after these interviews and you hear about how wonderful and everything, and you go down, you would go,
I worked in a lot of places in Latin America after college, and it's what I've said is that the Canal Zone will become Latin over time, and that's what's happening, and mm-hmm. that's fine. I mean, it yeah. makes a lot of sense to me that mm-hmm. it's their country and that's the way they want it to be, and so be it.
Yeah. So when,
but it's different. It's not the pristine American colony with the palm trees painted white and the grass cut all the time.
Oh, yeah. All the palm trees were from about here down were always painted white. Very military bases that way, and in the canal zone, and you never we had streets with just nothing but the real tall palms, just lining the streets. And if one of the palm fronds fell, oh, by the end of the day, somebody had picked it up and carted it away. Mm-hmm. Now it just, you know, stuff just lays there until...
It is what it is. You know,
it is what it is.
And it was time for the Americans to move on.
Okay. Where were you when that transfer occurred? You know, did you watch it on the news? And
no, I didn't. I left when I was 18.
Well, we followed, you know, we tended to follow it. Mm-hmm.
Now, my parents were still down there, and my brother was down there, and I was going to Argentina about that time.
79?
Yeah.
No, I was out of Argentina by then.
Yeah, your dad was gone. Edward was retired by then.
We can't give you that information,
but you'll get a lot of it, because a lot of, yeah, you'll get all that. Because things really did change. I mean, it started really changing. Now, my sister went down for the last high school graduating class of 1999, and she said that was very, very interesting. But we were both pretty much out of there by the early 60s.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people have strong opinions about it and emotions about it, but for you and your family, it was more.
Look,
just,
well,
we
you're good.
Just gone through Vietnam.
Uh huh.
Okay.
And the terrible times in Vietnam. Mm-hmm.
But
starting to become problems down there.
The riots
didn't want any parts of that.
The riots of 64. I can totally understand. Mm-hmm. And I can understand both sides. And the Americans living in the Canal Zone, including my family, everybody, they felt that this was our territory. That was our
yeah.
My father
country.
Felt that way.
It was
my
like there's Panama, there's Panama, and then there's the Canal Zone. And I think that we all felt like the Canal Zone was our country. And And we were all very, very, very patriotic to the American flag. I mean, it was, even though most of us never even lived in the United States, we really were.
Yeah, that's true.
Really allegiant to oh gosh, yes. And so I can understand where things got heated up when, you know, they wanted their flag flying mm-hmm. first, and this and that, and it. I mean, I can, you know.
Yeah.
But
so that was the tension.
That was the tension, and you know it was, you know, the young, yeah, they saw it as their country. It was their country, and they wanted, you know. They didn't like looking over the fence, and it was their canal, not really, but they're doing a very good job now. It's just hope it continues, mm-hmm. but yeah, so.
Well, a lot of them are educated in this country.
And
so
we are.
I'm going to school with you guys.
And we're a civilization that's changing. I mean, our group is going to get fewer and fewer as time goes on.
Right. So. I tease some people, I say, this is a good model for this place is the Veterans of the Civil War Society. It has an ending.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we're here doing this.
I know that.
Yeah. You know, to keep this
alive. And it's very nice of you
alive.
To do this. It really is.
Yeah, and there's just so much potential, like I mentioned, for research to come out of this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I personally think that I had a wonderful education. I learned about different cultures. Mm-hmm. And I led a life that would have been a lot different if I hadn't spent those 6 years down there. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've gotten into the early on when the first Americans were down there digging the canal. But if you have, you've probably found it very fascinating, the way of life and you know, how things just got better and better and then I mean, it's got a, you just start from the beginning and then you go to the riots and then you go to when everything was turned over, and it's just, there's, it's an interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting
from
story.
Start to be, yeah. There's a good PBS documentary on just the building of the canal. I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, but it's
We've
pretty good.
It.
The American,
very
yeah,
good.
Yeah. So, I mean, from that point to this to later on, it's a really interesting story, definitely.
I have one more question before we start wrapping things up. Did you both meet in high school or college?
High school.
Okay.
Aww.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Actually, before high school.
Oh.
I got proof.
we
knew each other.
Yeah, because we, you know, we took
dance. It's a small place.
We took ball. We took a lot of the kids took ballroom dancing. You had to learn how to dance. That was, you know, the
a
thing.
Sport.
So, okay. Yeah, there was, yeah, so, yeah, sport, yeah.
Yeah, we've known each other a long
so,
time.
So, yeah, and then we were in Spanish class together, but, yeah, we didn't start dating or anything until high school, but, yeah.
Maybe, what, 48 years?
48 years in a couple of weeks.
Congratulations.
That's great.
That's cool. That's exciting.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. But you're going to hear some more. Our story. Our
we have a different story.
Yeah, because we, you know, we left before we left by, you know, my I was gone by 62. So.
And I talked my brother and his wife into. They were down there when it was difficult. We kind of convinced them to come to the States. Mm-hmm. We helped them when they got here. You know.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, everybody has a different story and a different perspective.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You ought to share that article with them before we get out of here.
I just brought this because this is more of a personal thing, but this this is what drew my grandfather down and the fishing and their yes, and they they're very, very well known for their fishing in Panama history. They're all gone now. But yeah, it was kind of. I grew up on a fishing boat. Fishing was always, you know, part of my growing up.
Okay.
So
what's the article?
It's just on Panama fishing and
that's her father
and
I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And my grandfather, they built a. He went down with the boys, and then they built a boat, and they fished and worked.
That's a big fish.
They worked there to fish there, actually. Let's
actually,
put it that way.
There's one fish there is over 1,000 pounds, and her one uncle only had one arm and one leg, and he had to have help breathing it in, or it would have been a world record.
My goodness.
Wow. Okay. Is that him?
Wow.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's...
Yeah.
That's great.
Wow.
And that's from a book. Really, that's from a magazine. But Guy Harvey wrote a book.
Yeah, I saw
about,
Guy Harvey.
Yeah.
That's really
there's
cool.
Well, that's his. That's the most current article. But there's a lot of books. A lot of books that have the Panama fishing in there. And yeah, that was a big. It was a big.
That's mostly about her family right there.
Big to do. Yeah.
Okay.
My one uncle, the four boys. Well, the oldest one really. He worked, okay, my father's oldest brother he was a mule operator for the canal. The mule back then was attached to the ship with cables, and they pulled the ships through the canal. Mm-hmm. It's now all computerized. And then his other brother was an ad measure. Ships had to be measured before they could enter the canal, make sure that they were not too large. My dad was an electrician, and then his other brother ran the gas station, the one got the one arm and one leg. He was, we had one gas station, and that was, they repaired cars there, and he ran the gas station. So, but they really fished.
Okay.
It was like, okay.
That's pretty serious.
That was their life.
All right, well, I'll just start.
So, anyway, life was great down there.
Oh, no.
It really was.
It sounds idyllic.
Yeah.
And you, well, you haven't been involved with people that are here, and it's just getting started, but if you're going to be here through tomorrow.
You were here last year, though, weren't you?
Yeah. I think we're going to stay until about maybe 2 or 3 tomorrow afternoon and then head back up to Gainesville.
This group of people, this reunion's been going on here for a long, long time. This group of people are the closest-knit people. You'll see someone after years and years and years, and it's like time stood still. It's all the class reunions they have here are just incredible. The closeness. Anyway, it's just a very, very, you know, very close.
Mm-hmm.
Group
yeah,
of people.
That sounds great.
Sure, you can take my
picture.
Oh,
okay, yeah.
Action shots,
right?
Yeah.
We're truly working today. Too. We're really working.
When I pick up these papers, like I'm like.
Yeah. All right, we have documentary evidence.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. For the website, maybe.
Well, thanks for listening to us.
No problem.
Thank you
guys
for your time.
Yeah, that was great. Yeah.